The Weekend Podcast on Vox Markets with Justin, Peter and Steve. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
Come on, Steve. Answer the phone. Stephen.
Yes?
Hello, Stephen.
Hello, Steve.
How you feeling, fella?
Rough as hell.
Yeah. Steve, look. I mean, you're trying to arrange this amongst festivities, you know, and because obviously you guys have been going out and last night, because you know you have friends. Yep. Steve said, "I can't do it. It's 11 a.m. We're recording this on Saturday. I can't do it." Steve texts, "I can nearly open my eyes. Nearly, that's fine. I can nearly open my eyes. Ever so slightly hungover."
Yes, hungover.
When you have a problem texting, that's an issue, isn't it? But, you know, the effort, can't be stressed out. So what happened last night? Well, Steve, what did you get to, fella? Where'd you go?
Well, I only went to my local, but seen like friends who I haven't seen since last Christmas. And, you know, just
close then. Close friends.
Yes. Well, they don't live near me. They live in like Holland and stuff. So.
They live in Holland?
Yeah, they try to get as far away from me as possible.
As I say, it's not a close local then, is it, for them?
No. But they just there for the night.
Were they just there for the fight?
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, and they drove home all the way to Holland, drunk. 24-hour journey, drunk. I'm driving home, I'm pissed up. So do you know what the Christmas party is like a bit? I went to a Christmas party in London, of course, with Vox. And the way we're London, I had a couple of drinks out, and in the office, then a bit of a chat, then I went to a nice curry house, very posh curry house, though. And do you know what I do? I slipped out sort of early. I was gone. I was left by 9:30. Done and dusted.
Right.
It's a bit like the markets. You're better off getting out early, you know, than late.
Yes.
Did you not say goodbye to anyone? Did you just do a classic?
No. I didn't. I did say goodbye to everyone. Yeah, cause at the same table. You know. Thank. Thing is, you know, I thought, well, I've got to do work in the morning. I'm getting a bit sensible. I'm getting old. Essentially, I've just been downtown to Specsavers to get some glasses. Oh, that's how old I am. I can't see anything, yeah. I went in there, I said, you're going to pick the glasses. He said, no, next door, fellas, this is the butcher's. I said, all right, man, it is bad. So look, it's odd. Even I was walking to town to see the kids then. We just went into TK Maxx because the kids had to get presents from Megan. Running around sneakily putting stuff in the bag, you know. And then obviously not paying for it because that's the cheap way. Because I don't encourage buying tat. I don't encourage buying tat. I don't mind nicking it, but buying it's a whole different thing. But there we are. But, do you know what? I went to talking about Christmas. What are you doing? I went to Panto yesterday. I did, honestly. Oh, no, you didn't. I did. I went to Panto. There was Phil Mitchell, Bobby Davro.
All watching it?
Yes, I went with them. Yeah, it took me with I hook up with them every Christmas.
The kids at home.
Yeah, they're close friends of mine. I hook up with them every Christmas. Bobby Davro, you know, Phil Mitchell, or his name's Stephen Fadden, is it, I think. Joe McKeldry, who's an X Factor winner, who's so camp. I mean, I was going to complain about the excessive campness. I was going to write a letter afterwards saying, I'm sorry, that is almost, you know, pornographic in his campness, that guy. He's supposed to be the hero, Dick Whittington. He's supposed to be the man getting the lady. Suzanne Shaw was the lady, you know, from Hearsay. You know?
Oh, he fancied her.
Do you know what? She's looking very smart. I thought, I'm sure I saw a picture. There's so many sort of, part-time celebs these days who I'm obviously getting confused with somebody else, but I thought she'd put on like 10 stone of weight, you know. But she's looking very attractive, Steve. But what a funny thing is, Joe McKeldry is supposed to be her love interest, you know, and he's more camp than her. You know what I mean? You're not convincing anyone here. And when he's singing, he does a lot of that ear grabbing, you know, hand out, grab the ear, pull it in. He does that every 5 seconds, smiling his face off. And I'm not a big fan of camp. You know, I hate musicals. I hate all that stuff. And the kids loved it. I hated it. Absolutely dreadful. But I tell you what, they must have been spending a bit of money on it. Because at the start, there's this massive rat that came out onto the audience. And it was huge. And you only saw it once. And I thought, wow, that is nuts. But,
An animatronic thing?
Yeah, animatronic rat. And then a bus that sort of flew halfway into the audience as well with Joe in, waving, hello, bye-bye, I'm going. Turned down the camp a little bit, yeah?
Right, yeah.
But like a bus that went, raised up and across. But the kids absolutely love it, you know? And Because they're
Bobby
simple.
Bobby Davro, that's a classic, isn't it?
Bobby Davro was there, doing the gags. He seemed like really half-hearted. The kids loved it, but I just seemed like half. I think that's probably just the way he is, you know. But
he's done it so many times.
Do you know what they don't have panto in America, and now it's catching on in Broadway, and they've never had panto in America ever, and we see it like a bit of a tired old tradition here. They've just had one on Broadway. And it's and normally, I think it was the New York Times who would never ever write about these kind of things because it's quite lowbrow sort of entertainment. I've given it rave reviews. So the pantomime is now catching on in New York, which is nuts, isn't it? And talking about catching on, this is where I get into stocks and shares, boys. Here we go.
At last.
We have caught the cold from the sneeze of America. That always sort of happens. Yeah. You know, the American is the biggest stock market in the world, you know, and the biggest economy. Well, some say China is as big, but you know they have less publicly listed or privately listed companies, or publicly listed, I mean, so it doesn't affect us so much. But it's a truly international. And we know we're in a bad market. And you look at your portfolios, it's all red pretty much a lot of the time. And I'm glad I did swap out a lot of resource stocks. I hold no resource stocks now, but but look at the stats. They're saying this is the worst December, right, for the Dow, for the Nasdaq, and the S&P since the Great Depression in 1931. Wow. So we are now, I mean, if you're listening to this, people, you think, I'm stock market, I've had it, I'm done with it. Don't, because you are experiencing one of the worst sell-offs ever in December, in this last couple of months especially. So if you can put up with this.
Well, it was the worst October for a while as well, wasn't it?
Yeah, so if you can stick with it, the rebounds are generally very good on these kind of things. And I'm expecting, I'm genuinely expecting a rebound in resource stocks. I know you still guys hold quite a few. I'm expecting a really aggressive bounce in resource stocks. All you need, because everything's built in. All the worry, all the uncertainty is all priced into the shares. That's what I think. There's all this worry about slowing down. I don't think the actual figures of the slowdown, you know, in the next few months will be as bad as what people are predicting right now. And so I just think we'll have a bounce with, isn't it worried? It's that uncertainty, isn't it? So the stock market overprices, it overreacts, you know, overswings like a pendulum. It will sell, oversell, you know?
Yes, then I mean, that's, for me, that's the fear, isn't it, of selling now.
Yeah.
Because it's like, when is that, if that's going to happen? But it might not, it might fall further. But it's just, I'm just still in my, just sit tight, hold, pray.
Yeah, it's very depressing every day you go on. It is depressing. Is it in red? Is it? Yeah. There's another.
I think it's depressing because of the highs we're at very relatively short while ago. And that's the really depressing part, because it has been a real crash, hasn't it? In the last 2 months.
That's it. I've had emails from people saying, you know, I'm more than this, do you think I should sell? It's a resource stock or something. And I say, well, listen, you know, I'm not bullish longer term. I mean, I think we're already into a bear market. Bear markets, you know, and recessions, they only last, the actual downturn lasts about 7-8 months. And in total, from top to bottom, to go back up there, it's about, you know, a year. So we've almost had 3 months of it, you know, it's almost 3 months done. And I think that the big fall has probably been priced in. There'll be a bit of volatility, but I think there'll be rallies in which you can sell on those rallies. But
I'm not sure about a Santa rally.
Santa Rally, right? Traditionally, it's the last week. So it's Monday.
And then what? Wednesday, Thursday, Friday. Thursday, Friday, right.
It's a lot of ground to make up in those last few days.
Exactly.
I know. But there's three theories of why the Santa Rally exists. And they reckon it went back to when hedge fund managers readjust their books and traditionally you sell off before the end of year. So tie up the books and sort of sort it out for next year, get ready for the new year. And then people started to do it a bit earlier and started taking positions ahead of the new year, you know? And so they started realizing this, realizing the money would go back in the market in January. And so people wanted to be in as soon as possible for that January rally. And so people started going into the market, back into the market, in the last few trading days of the year. The hedge funds and all this, they started buying backup stock to be in the rally for the early of the year. So that's what they reckon it happens. So it could happen. I mean, so it rolls into January. It's not just the end of December. Sometimes you can see a bullish start of the year, you know, which is quite good.
Yeah, I've got a sort of a surefire way, I reckon, of getting everything back on the up.
Whenever someone says surefire, right, I know it's the pretty much opposite.
No. Oh, I think it's pretty much guaranteed, and it's quite simple. Steve, you should start selling all your stocks.
Yes.
And boom, and then we'll go skyrocket. You know,
I can see that's a guaranteed kind of win for everyone.
Exactly.
Apart from me.
Well, no, but you take one for the team, Steve. Come on. It's Christmas.
I'm not sure.
Well, and if it happens, we should just all chip into your fund, Steve. It's okay.
Are you volunteering?
You should set one up called the Steve Martin Contrarian Fund. Literally, whatever I do the opposite. It's perfect. Steve is buying this week. Sell, everyone, sell! Right, next week I'm selling. Buy, everyone!
Exactly. I'll be like the Mystic Meg of the shares world.
Yeah, well, the opposite, yeah. Yeah, and she's done very well, hasn't she?
Yeah.
What does she do now?
Exactly. All right. So, do you know what? I've got a new acronym, everyone. I know you like acronyms and analogies. And, of course, I've got my cash acronym, which is always there. Now, I'm genuinely, I said, flipping out from companies, the resource companies that need funding. Because I still think it'll be a difficulty to get funding away in the next, I think 12 months. But who knows? It's hard to predict a month in the market, a week or day. But so I'm genuinely edging or pivoting towards stocks that have revenue, that are heading towards profitability, that will need no funding till they get there. So they don't have to go back to the market. Mm-hmm. They won't dilute shareholders and they won't have discounted fundraisers. And so my initial acronym is always there. That's the initial quality filter, cash, Steve, take us through the cash filter.
Cash.
C stands for?
Cash.
No, it doesn't. That's always a cash down, isn't it?
Oh, God, so long ago since I...
C is, yes. Can you think of any word... I know you're hungover. Can you think of any words that begin with C?
No. Carrot?
No, I can't. No. It's not carrot. It's very
capital.
It's very festive, though, carrots, aren't they?
Capital.
There was a topical joke in the panto, actually. Do you hear it?
Yeah.
I'm having a Brexit Christmas lunch. No Brussels.
Boom, boom.
Yeah!
You should try that, Steve, with your mother.
I bet the kids got that.
Yeah. Some was very near the knuckle, I thought. Some of them was, but...
it always is, isn't it? Trying to, appeal to the adults as well.
Okay. Yeah, okay. Do you know what? And do you know in pandos, they ham it up and pretend that things happen, pretend they fall over and stuff? They do certain routines and pretend things go wrong? And this happens. We know as adults, right, that these things are, they're planned. They meant to go wrong. Like they kept falling over. They did 10 days of Christmas with all these different bits. They'd pick them up, run around, falling over, dropping them in the band pit. And as a normal human, educated or half educated person, you realise this is part of the shtick. They've rehearsed all this. There was a family behind us. I don't know if it's an odd family, but there were large females. Put it this way, right? Really having to sit back because they're quite big. Sit back.
They're related to you.
Yeah. And literally, they were weighing themselves laughing. He fell over. She fell over. What's he done? He fell over. He fell over here. Oh, yeah, he fell over. I thought, we were three simple people. This is the kind of stuff my 5-year-old son would laugh at, Yeah. Did he fall over?
You're no fun, Justin.
And then they did the thing and actually hit him in the nether region with it, something, He fell on the floor, body down. Hit him in the balls. Hit him right in the neck. There were literally these fat women behind me who were laughing their heads off. And I looked across, right? They had no kids with them. They had no kids. I thought, you are coming here to this panel just for yourselves. That is the level, isn't it? I mean, essentially, panto is for kids, isn't it? But they do tell a couple of guys, so the adults, to keep them stop being bored, essentially. But these just went for themselves. And I think that is a certain measure of pertinent person, isn't it? Anyway, back to the acronym. How do we get from that to that? I don't know. C is capitalisation. And why do I say this, Steve? What does that mean? Tell me all about this, please.
Capitalization is.
Yes. I hope you got past this lesson on Steve so far. Have we?
No.
Are you stuck on capitalization, Steve?
Yeah.
Are you honestly? I was joking a while back. Steve's research is what's the ticker? That's the length of his. What's the ticker? I'm sorry, as a capitalization. Do you know what market capitalization is?
What are shares? I don't know.
Do you know what the market capitalization is of a company? What do you know what that means?
It's the value of the company.
That's it, yes. God, I'm glad we got over that barrier. I really thought then, we've been doing this for like a couple of, almost 3 years probably, and Steve's not passed the first thing.
You're forgetting that he's hung either.
He's hung either, yes.
He's,
and he can nearly open his eyes.
Yeah, he can nearly open his eyes.
I can nearly open my eyes, I'm hung either. You've hung Eva. Is that the bird you met last night? Oh, well, that was a rough night. Second, there's two C's in this acronym. Of course, second C is chart. Always look at the chart, make sure you have some spite. The A is for assets. You know, go over the balance sheet, look at the cash, make sure they've got cash there. Make sure they've got current assets, not current liabilities. They're not in the hole. S is for shareholders. That means, is there a tight register? Ooh, you've got a tight register. Thank you very much. But yeah, does the CEO and the board hold. Steve, what are you fiddling with? Who's fiddling?
I just pulled my socket out.
What, from Hung Eva?
S, significant milestone. Of course, you've got to have something, you know, are they going to be heading towards something that will generate value for the company? Other S as well, simplicity. Never get involved in companies you don't understand. If you don't understand what they do for a living, don't really understand, because there's lots of them out there, or you don't understand the funding mechanism, or it's very complex, or in a jurisdiction that makes it very complex as well. Maybe avoid it, because there are other opportunities out there you can look at that make it simple. And often you get companies, and you know there are companies that have gone down and been proven to be fraudulent, and essentially they've tried to make the business complex, they've tried to not really look at the books properly, they have subsidiaries, they're doing this, or you know, and they think, oh, okay, or the subsidiary of a subsidiary, and you think, what's going on here? And so if you don't understand it, avoid it. And the H, of course, for cash is head on shows. Look at their track records. Have these guys done this before, or is it an impressive track record they've got, you know? So that's cash. And if you put your company through that filter, straight away, that'll discount a lot of rubbish. You know, you get rid of a lot of rubbish as well. You know, you often have companies talking up their stock, CEOs, and I still stick by this. I still maintain this. It is a red flag to me when a management doesn't hold a nice bit of chunk of skin in the game, or the shares aren't tightly held. Because I'm thinking, you are talking up the stock, and you're a man of money. You are, you know, a capitalist. You're in the corporate environment. You like money. If you could make money on this company, you would be invested in this company, full stop. I don't want any excuses. So I call it that. But are you ready for the new acronym? You're going to like this, Steve. It's short, it's sweet, but it helps with revenue-generating countries. So it's basically linked to significant milestone, essentially. So this is about news. So it's ARK. Spell ARK, Steve.
ARK.
Nope. It's going to be ARC, isn't it?
It is ARC, yes. Yeah, yeah.
50-50. Unlucky, Steve.
ARC is ARK, right? Because A, what does it stand for? Now, A stands for
assets.
AIM. No, it stands for this is basically with the story of the company. So A stands for aim. What's the aim of the company? And what are you hoping for them to achieve? So you write it down. What does the company say they're going to do? Now, if that aim is profitability, then you write it down. Okay, the aim is profitability, right? Then do you want R stands for reiteration.
The aim of most companies.
Do you know what? They say that. But if you look at resource companies, about 2% go from being an explorer to actually generating something. So, you know, and there are lifestyle companies on aim that have been there forever, and they're nowhere near generating revenue, even though they make this pretense of generating revenue. Why should they? The board's on 100 grand a year, 120 grand a year, the CEO, you know, for not doing very much. You know, they're not generating any revenue, but pay themselves over, you know, six-figure sums. They think, well, hang on, you know, this is quite a cushy little number, this. Got the board meetings and all that stuff. So some of them do just, you know, give the pretense, or even they discover their product or their drug or their resource, whatever they got, is not that good. You know, it's not going to get it's not as commercial as they think. They get away with it for a long time, but they do exist out there. There are, you know, basically snake oil salesmen out there. You know, enlisted companies, they've done very well for a long period of time. That's always worth looking at when you look at the head honchos of a company. Go into the final results. Sometimes they won't print it, in an RNS because it's too long, or the remuneration packages. Go and have a look at the pay that the directors get. And I'd suggest for a small cap below 10 million that's not earning any revenue, for any sort of director to pay themselves, I'd say above 150 grand is ridiculous. You want to see 100 grand or less, I want to see, for a CEO of a generating no revenue, but they're aligned to shareholders because they own stock in the game, because that's the upside for them. They believe in the company, they can earn a lot of money too, you know, or they get paid more in shares. I like it when companies get paid, you know, they accept shares, because it means they're fine, they're aligned with the company, they believe the company's going to do well. So rather than taking a big chunk of money in wages, take them in shares. If you believe in the company, take them in shares. So that's A for aim of a company to become profitable, all right? This is for revenue-generating companies. This is the ones I'm looking at. And in fact, we're going to do a little video on this, but I'm looking at three at the moment, which is one is Tuple, the other one is Brave Bison, the other one is Bidstack, all right? They've both got funds to take them through to profitability. They all three say that. But they're all different stages. So the second part of this three-legged sort of goal is R for reiteration. Since they first mentioned they're going to profitability, or if they've put themselves up, have they reiterated this? Or have they changed the goals? Because this can also happen. Have they said a couple of times, we are aiming towards profitability this time? Have they said it, you know, once, twice? And is it recent? You know, that's what I look at. That's what a second leg bit. I like reiteration of their aim. So they got an aim and they reiterated. They don't move the goalposts in any way. And the third thing, the C, is confirmation. Now, I would say a big stacker on aim. They're looking for, they're going to profitability. Apparently, they broke a record, they're going to profitability by 2020, full year. But they'll be cash flow positive towards the end of 2019. Tuple reckon the same. They've also reiterated about three times now. So but the Bidsack guys haven't yet, because they've had very little news. In fact, they've had one bit of good news come out, but they've had very little news, and then the CEO hasn't come out and done a trading update. But hopefully when they do, they'll give us a lay of the land. But Tuple have, so they've had their aim. They mentioned about three times now that they are heading towards profitability, and the cash they have will take them there. And in fact, in their last set of final results, this wasn't a busy quarter. It ended on the 30th of September, their results. And their records, it's been quite good, August, September, but October has been a record month. November has been a record month. It beat October. And in the podcast interview, Andy said December, even though it was on day 18, is beating November. So they're breaking records, right? Every month. So that's looking quite good. So they reiterated, though, that they're going towards cash flow positive. And if I look at it, their margins are up. I think the interims will be a lot better than this. They've just started gearing up now and starting getting good sales. But year-on-year revenue is up 17%, gross profit is up 28%, operating a loss before tax is down 10%, so the losses are going down. Second half over the first half, revenue is up 18%, gross profit is up 45%, and loss before tax is down 4%. Loss after tax first half, second half is down 28%. So it's good. The losses are going down, the revenue is going up. But I think it'll get even better in the interims. So, first of all, we've had aim, reiteration for Tuple. We've had aim for Bidsack. Now, Brave Bison, I believe, done all three. They've done aim, they've done reiteration, and the C is for confirmation. They announced recently in a trading update that they will be cash flow positive, and they've got cash building, you know? So they've done all three. So to me, it's like a decreasing risk here, and it's like looking at, say, you know, phase 1, 2, and 3 in drug trials, or when they go from a resource to a pre-feasibility study to a feasibility study in mineral resources. Is that kind of de-risking here? Because right now, it's looking like Brave Bison will never have to go back to the market. I've looked at their cash position, it's going up. That means they're accumulating cash and they haven't raised any money. So they are making money. They are actually achieving their aim. So that's what I like. So, I mean, to me, that's a less risky at the moment. But they're a bit of a bigger market cap, I suppose. But they've got $5 million in cash. You know, half their market cap is in cash. They've got a big seller in there, which I mentioned in my last video. You can go and see that, Invesco. Invesco's been selling down. They're down to about just under 10% now. But that sort of makes sense, doesn't it? Have a look at a company's aim. Make sure they reiterate that aim, you know, several times. Because sometimes you'll have this. You'll have a company state an aim, they're going to do something. Then all of a sudden, it'll get missed out in the next update. You know, they'll not mention it. And you think, oh, hang on, their goals have slipped. And they're not doing as well as I thought. But if they keep reiterating that aim, they intend to be profitable, then I assume they know what's happening and they're doing very well, they're heading towards it. And then what you want is confirmation. And that confirmation de-risks completely. But as far as investing is concerned, I look at the companies you really like, put them through my cash filter, and then I'd put a sort of pilot amount of money in on the aim of a company. You can put a bit more in. You can put a bit more in when they reiterate that aim, you know, several months and a couple of times after they've stated the aim. And then, of course, when you get confirmation, you can feel free to put a bit more in money in, because it's less risky, because they are now, you know, what's going to go wrong there? They're profitable, they're making money. Does that make sense in any way?
Yeah, so do you put it through the cash filter first?
Oh, yes.
Right, and then you kind of move on to your arc.
Yeah, because I'm just thinking about how do you measure these companies? You know, what do you do them in the meantime? Because, you know, you get interims and trading updates and so that. But how do you know? Like, you know, I know a company, I'm not going to mention what it is, but missed targets several times. So it's generating revenue, and they missed targets several times, you know, and the stock price takes a knock. So you've got to make sure, you know, that the management are, you know, basically delivering on their promise. Not trying to avoid it anyway. And any news out this week anyway on the thing? But I suppose it's like end of year. I do think with the moment. Coulter, well, in Wick. So Wick is Wick and Coulter. Uplands involved with Wick. United Oil and Gas is involved with Coulter down south. Wick's up more north, and of course Wick is going ahead this year. I like this. There's several companies involved, right? So in the Wick drill, there's is Upland, there's Rehoboth Resources, I think Barron Oil, and of course Corallian, and down south then there's also United Oil and Gas. It's the same rig. It's the same hot rig, they call it. United Oil and Gas. Who else is Boyle? And it's a Barron Oil, and Rehoboth as well. Yeah. So two of them. So a couple of companies, like Rehoboth and Barron Oil, have exposure to both those. But it'd be exciting to see what happens here. Whether one's a success, the other one's not, or they're both successes, or they're both not successes. Because it's the same rig, same company operating the rig, same energy company behind the operators, Corallian. And it's just very exciting. So one's going to happen in 2018, one's going to happen in 2019. I'm thinking, at last, I think Brian Larkin did a conference call on Friday. He obviously did quite well because... or Thursday, because the share price was up like 8.4%. No, it was very nice indeed.
Yeah. Did you say it's doing 2018? Did you mean...
Wick will be... No, Wick is happening now.
It's happening right now.
Wick is happening in the next few days. It's going on. I mean the rig mobilisation was announced, and so it's happening very soon. But, but Coulter, down south, is happening probably in the first month of... January, February of 2019. So, it's nice to see it finally. Because, it's an awful time, but oil and gas hasn't risen at all of late. It's so annoying, And it's now, because, like I said, people, the markets change. That's another acronym, A&E, right? That's adapt and evolve. The market has changed a little bit from, like I said, a growth, based economy, which everything's growing, to now growth is slowing down. And when that happens, the market takes on a different dynamic, and there are different stocks you should be looking at. That's why I've switched and pivoted out of resource and into revenue-generating stocks, because...
Everything is kind of cyclical, though, isn't it? So it
yes, oh, yeah, but... Definitely, but do you know what? How long? That's the thing. It is cyclical. And now... If you hadn't been involved in resource stocks at all, there's some cracking bargains out there, I think.
Yes,
companies with cash that have a plan to do something and know where they're going, there's some amazing bargains out there. It's tiny market caps. But this is what happens, because the worry is all real, though, because these companies have to raise money. And it's difficult. Yep. People don't want to raise money. People don't even, people don't want to sort of invest in this. It's just uncertainty. The mind is everything. I was talking earlier to... in fact, Chris Bailey on Friday, and I was saying, when I first started investing, I used to see these sentiment indexes, and I thought, what does that mean? Sentiment? What does that? That means nothing. What does that do with real stuff? And you realise that sentiment is everything, because as an investor, you will find a couple of people now selling into rallies because they're worried, right? So they're bringing money out of the market. That's a private investor. That goes up the chain ladder to mid-caps sort of, or small-caps sort of hedge funds, and then you've got bigger hedge funds doing the same. And when there's so much uncertainty out there, people will start delaying investment. Maybe not even pulling it, but even delaying investment. But some are pulling it. There's more cash now out of the market. So stat recently, there's more cash out of the market. They've been pulling out of the market in the last couple of months. It's been done in about 4 years. So, that uncertainty, people not knowing what's happening, it's delaying investment, it's slowing the economy down. We've got China, we've got Brexit, we've got Italian debt, which is always a problem. All these things going on. And
now we've got the US shutdown as well, haven't we?
Yeah, and that happens every year. Donald Trump wants his wall. It's like, do you know what? But which president's in every year, right? They have to agree a budget for the federal government, and they don't agree it on time. And then so a lot of people working in the government don't get paid. Or get delayed and paid. But Donald Trump now has said he's not going to sign it until he gets his wall for Christmas. That's ridiculous, isn't it? Yep. It's a wall, Donald. Do you not understand? People have planes and stuff. You think that'll solve everything? It's a wall.
Yeah.
How simple is it? Do you know what? That last guy that's the head of military, who just... retired, didn't he? He just resigned. And they've said that's quite worrying, because... he was the last sort of sensible guy between Donald's respected in charge of the military. And they all advised him not to pull out of Syria and all that stuff, because there will be, you know, repercussions. We'll pull out, there'll be a vacuum, and there'll be trouble again, and it won't end there. Donald said, no, I want to pull the guys out. So he didn't take the top officials, you know, top military officials. And that's typical of Donald Trump. He's a guy who's involved in the military, worked out in the military all his life. You know, he's an expert in the military. That's his thing. You know, Donald's thing is just expanding business on credit and debt. That's his thing. So don't you know, if you want to bankrupt a company and you want to build it quick and then bankrupt it, that's Donald's thing. You know, he can do that. But he's just basically overruled this military leader. And a lot of people said, Donald respected this guy, and he's retired, and he's the last sensible guy in the White House now. And it's amazing the amount of people have left or has been sacked or retired.
Yeah.
But they're saying this is a worrying thing, because that guy there really did have authority, and Donald now doesn't listen to him. Why would you? Why have... Presidents is there as a head, as a figurehead, you know, good orators, but they have to take advice from advisors who know better. And I just think it must be a nightmare to just tell Donald, you know, just explain to him that you know something more than he does. Because I don't believe he thinks anyone knows anything better than him. And so it's a bit worrying. But that's why, I mean, at the moment, what's your portfolio, Steve? What's your portfolio like? Have you sold anything recently, or are you just hanging on there? What's going on?
No, I haven't sold anything for a few weeks, no. It's so in the red at the moment, I think I'm just going to kind of ride it out for a little bit, if I'm honest.
Yeah.
Enjoy that downward spiral.
You know, I was speaking to you, was it, last week, about potentially selling Uplands, because that's quite up at the moment. But
I wouldn't. Yeah, but I mean, you can de-risk on the spud, because it's still risky. These spuds are still risky on these oil companies, even though they're a higher chance of success at WIC. They're not like a high impact, you know, unknown quantity. You know, it's you know, those kind of things are like 10-1, 5-10-1 odds against. These are, I think, almost evens, you know, so it's a good bet that they'll come in, but still there's a risk there, you know. It's a flip for a coin, so it's how do you play it, you know.
There's a couple of my shares which I think are like hitting the -90% now, and I just kind of think, they're never going to come back, are they? Or well, if they do, they might have a little bit of a spike, but not to even break even on that. So there's a few I've just kind of written off, but holding
that. Which ones are you like 90% down in?
Oh, I haven't got my portfolio open in front of me. Is ACP one of them? I can't remember now.
Capital. Yeah, again, but you know what? They got a good project. It's, you know, it's in Tanzania, Mozambique. But I mean, it's graphite, you know, and they do need funding. Like I said, there's problems at the moment with funding, you know, and it is like that. It is cyclical. The resource stocks are cyclical. I got criticised for asking Tony Manini on Asia Mets, a couple of people go at me on Twitter and stuff, and saying, oh, very biased from, you know, Share Pickers, which is my Twitter account, saying, asking Tony Manini about resource stocks, saying he's a bit bearish on them, he sold his resource stocks. And I thought, well, hang on, what do you mean, me, a robot or what? I mean, I'm an investor, I've got a personality, I have an opinion, and so I'm going to put that. And the guy said, why would you ask that of a CEO of a resource company? And I said, well, that's highly relevant, surely. I wouldn't ask about resource stocks to someone who's in retail.
But I guess their point is, you know what the answer's going to be, don't you?
No, I was asking Tony. But he was saying, no, he was attacking me, saying, why would you say that? Because Tony Manini knows the cyclicality of the business. He's been here for years. He's done it before. Yeah. He's a genius. He's a well-learned man. He's very erudite. He's experienced all the ups and downs of commodities and all that. So you know, as an investor, I've only been small caps pretty much, or micro caps for like 3.5-4 years. I'm all the macro signs I'm reading, it doesn't look very good. And so I'm bearish on the resource company. But he said, that's what it is, you know. But this is the best time to build a mine. He said, what you don't want to be doing is start producing and have a slump. And what you want to do is actually building the mine now when everything's cheap. You know, even service companies helping you build the mine is cheap. And then what you want to do...
As long as you're funded.
And then you want to be producing when the commodity's flying then. But exploring and developing, that's the time when you want it cheap. So he said, you know, this is the way it is. But obviously investors get spooked by this kind of market and run and hide. But... it's hard to say. I mean, I would definitely see stuff that has good projects like that, and they're actually going somewhere, which Armadale Capital is going somewhere. They've had milestones, and I just think they will go somewhere, you know. And
To be fair, I just looked at it. It wasn't 90%. That's 50% down. So
there you go.
Oh, there we are. You're almost in profit there.
See? You're halfway to profit.
But do you know what? Though, in microcaps with big resources like them, honestly, a 50% in a week is not, you know, unknown. Yeah. You know, it's not unknown. Exactly. So we see daily drops, you know.
Yeah. My thinking is that, like, I just know that the ones I would sell will be the ones that actually have a massive turnaround, and the ones I'd keep are the ones that will crash and burn. So I'm taking the approach that I'm not selling anything. Some will crash and burn. Some will recover. I don't know which ones will be falling to which category, but I just hope that's the case.
I just hope a couple do.
I've convinced myself that we are heading towards not start this year. I think we'll have a cracking rally for the first quarter or so. I think resource stocks will have. I think something will give, the worry will fade. You know, I think China and America will get a deal on. That's where it's coming from, you know? I mean, China, like I said, they consume pretty much half all copper produced, all nickel produced. You know, they're massive consumers of commodities and resources. So whenever they're in trouble, or seem like they're in trouble, you know, commodities, everything, the sentiment just takes a hit. So once that's sorted, and let's be honest, it's not a good position for America or China. They're both going to get it sorted because there are Chinese, you know, soybean farmers that go out of business. Isn't that? China buy the majority of American soybeans, and yet they've stopped buying them. They've also put a tariff on cars, which have lowered now to 40%. So it's not good for America, even though Trump is beating his chest saying we're winning this. It's not good for anyone. It doesn't help anyone's economy. So you may be winning, but you're winning in a losing game. You're both losing, you know? It's like, oh, you're at least down, but you're both down. It doesn't help. And for a man who wants growth, doesn't help. Doesn't play to the thing. And he knows that. He's just playing the old, you know, hard game. So I think once that's sorted, I think resource companies will rally. But I still think we're in a slowdown situation because it's too much. It takes a long time. Once you get a lot of negativity, a lot of sentiment in the negative, it takes a long time for that to recover. You know, can't just recover overnight and can't just flip the switch on and say, all right, back to normal. Because it doesn't. It takes a long time for things to start recovering again. But apart from that, I just think I do think we've had the worst of it pretty much. When you have these historical figures coming out saying we're the worst in standard.
Well, I don't know. maybe not. I'm not sort of. I hope you're right, but I'm not betting on that.
But no, the worry over even Brexit, right? I don't want to get political on your ass, but the worry over Brexit, right, is now easily priced in. Easily, it's like it's like people think going to WTO rules. It's a World Trade Organization. It's set up for people to aid trade, you know? People think going to that is at the end of a cliff. It's like, it's not. We will still trade. It's fine. It's always maybe not the preferred route. But the worry about that is way overblown. It's complete. There are plenty of countries who trade, you know, very profitably on WTO. And we are the fifth biggest economy in the world. We're the second biggest economy in Europe. We can deal with it. It's fine. You know, it may not be as good as what we want, but we are pricing in, like, almost, you know, the economy imploding and no one doing any trades, not even someone selling an apple. No, we can't even buy a pair of shoes. We can't buy any water. It's like, I saw someone on thing saying suicides are now go up because of Brexit. It's like, what are you talking about? Well, if that's the case, I don't, you know, be light-hearted about it, but I will. But if people are committing suicide because of Brexit, maybe you commit suicide about anything, really. I think you're stable. Your mind is so unstable that I think, you know, any kind of problem. But this program of worry is not good for anyone. And they don't realise that they're damaging business by saying, we're going off a cliff here. You are damaging business by saying that. So it doesn't help. So I think once we get the deal sorted, some kind of deal sorted, it will generally help. Because it's this uncertainty, this, you know, opaqueness that people can't see beyond, this fog of fear. It's really upsetting the markets and the economy, and I just think it's not good for anyone.
There's a political agenda there, isn't there, to try and cancel Brexit, I think, you know, for people that are Project Fear and all that. I am a Remainer, but I still see that there is that kind of Project Fear, but I sort of think that's a good thing. Because it'd be good to cancel Brexit, but that's my opinion. But there
I just see the way Europe are. Like,
I don't
get political.
Let's talk about Steve's hangover instead.
Yes, well, Steve, you're going out again today, aren't you?
Yeah.
You said at 12 o'clock you're going out.
Well, no, it's actually been delayed now, which has kind of worked out perfectly, to be honest. So,
Has it been delayed because everyone going is hungover?
Well, no, it's a different friend that's come down from Sheffield, but I was just supposed to go out for like one or two last night, but I just had about 6 pints of...
Six pints? Oh, Steve! Yeah. I had six pints of very strong lager, actually.
And six pints of milk.
On an empty stomach, which is probably not sensible.
Six pints?
And an empty head.
Yeah, that's the trouble, yeah. 6 pints of very strong lager and an empty belly, Steve. Ooh, I say.
Oh, yeah. I've not drunk all Christmas, though, so it was kind of a bit of a blowout, really.
All Christmas? Christmas hasn't started.
No, well, it has today.
Do you have a big one last night, Pete, or not?
Sorry.
No, I did this morning, though. did you go for a drink?
So childish. Not as big as Steve's, by the sound of it.
Yeah. Have you seen Bob?
Yeah.
Do you know what? I took with that child. Have you seen Bob and Vic? They have a new show.
How good is that?
I love it. Do you know what? It all comes down to, in the end, winkies and knackers and all that stuff and silly things. And it's just so childish.
Did you see the one where they had George Ezra playing?
Yeah. And they said,
Then it's just beautiful. They come on and put a heater on for him.
Yeah.
And then he's only been singing about a minute, and Bob comes back home with a really personal platter of food.
But sorry, George, I didn't realise this was going to go on this long. He just started the song for 3 seconds. I didn't realise this was going on this long. It's a bit like, I'm sure that's happened with Eric and Ernie, but Steve's watched this towards the end. They just come on, put a platter of food. Sorry, George, I didn't know it's going on this long. There's a bit of food there for you. And they went back off, and they come on with their anoraks on and their plastic bags. George, we're going to have to make a move, fella, because we didn't realise this was going to. Yeah, I didn't realise it don't last as long, so they put a heater there for him, and they switch the lights off, and he's still taking on his own. See, George, and it's a cracking. But
it's just brilliant, and all the nonsense. Yeah, just brilliant.
It's interesting how they rebooted. What was the previous one they did, which was quite big?
Well, they did House of Fools.
Yeah,
Shooting
Stars was the one.
Shooting Stars, but then they revamped it. It was rubbish, wasn't it?
Yeah, but do you know what? Shooting Stars was always more mainstream, I think. I mean, I can understand why people... I could make them watch Bob and Vic's Big Night Out and not find it absolutely childish and not laugh at all. I can see why people think that. I know it's Marmite sort of comedy. I love it, but I can see why people think this is absolute nonsense. I mean, I've seen them do videos at the Montreal Comedy Festival, mostly Americans, where it's all the same kind of shtick. America's out of there. Have you ever noticed how, almost kind of observational comedy? They go on with a massive carpet, 40-foot carpet, and apparently they took that on the plane with them. They're special. But they're 40-foot carpet, a very magic carpet, very magic car. And they just died. They died on stage. Yeah. And then Americans look at them and think, what's going on here? I have no idea what's going on here. And
so, I don't understand it. Yeah,
yeah. I understand how they would die at, mainstream sort of comedy events. People just wouldn't get them at all. But, and it always
it's
comes
so
out.
It's so dry, though, isn't it? Some of the humour is just so, it's just bizarre.
Yeah.
And on the face of it, it isn't funny, but for some reason, it's hilarious if you're in that mindset.
Yes,
but anyway. It's brilliant. Well worth watching. It's 4 episodes. So if anybody hasn't watched it, get out over Christmas, sit down and watch them. Fantastic.
Fred's whispering to me in the back there. So, Fred, I'm trying to talk to him. And Fred's saying, can you do this at my house? You don't get that on News at 10, do you, on Question Time or Andrew Neil? Your son saying, excuse me, Dad, can you come and play football in the garden with us? No! We'll take you to the panto, get in your traps! Right, listen, lads, have a nice Christmas, better go, because we're nattering on. Have a nice Christmas, and we'll speak next year.
Absolutely, yes. Have a good one.
The Weekend Podcast on Vox Markets with Justin, Peter and Steve. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.